We are KPW 97.3 LPFM, also simulcasting at www.kpw.org, Eugene, Oregon's new community radio station.
DJ Susti here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming on KEPW.org. All right, today, of course, it's the anniversary of the Reichstag fire of 2001. I call it that because, just like the Reichstag fire, it was a justification for the subsidizing multinational corporations, in this case, the defense contractors. But it's also another anniversary of the South Central Farm situation issue down in Los Angeles. So I have some audio recorded way back then because it's another example of how the go-to move of the United States government is always to give money to corporations, whether it's the pharmaceutical companies during a pandemic or the defense contractors and like Halliburton, the defense construction contractors during hurricanes or the offense contractors during 9/11 or the real estate developers and real estate speculators during the South Central crisis, South Central farm crisis. That's the real, whatever the conspiracy is, that's the real issue is, what is the response of the U.S. government? And it's always the status quo that they protect. And the status quo being multinational corporations. So instead of putting money in at the bottom and supporting things like South Central Farm. All right, so don't forget our weekly newscast is on Sundays and Mondays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. We put a lot of work into bringing you local news. So that's Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 1 p.m. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Okay, this is Talk Is Cheap. Thanks for listening. All right, so South Central Farm. Let me just give you, land reform is critical to any social justice movement. This is a debate that we're all having, the basic stuff. I just finished, and I'm going to get to the South Central Farm. I'm going to tie this in, believe me. Just finished Gone to Croatan, and I'm in the middle of The Many-Headed Hydra. What these books are about is, for instance, in Road to Croatan, they talk about the Roanoke colony that you're taught about in junior high. Is what they found out what happened to them is they just split because the Massachusetts Bay Company or whatever colonial imperialist entity left them there. Just they left them on Roanoke Island with barely any resources and said, okay, we'll be back in a year. Make sure you have something for us to export back to England. And so they just said, to heck with this, man. We're going to go live with the Indians. And the Indians seem to have, on Croatan, seem to know what they're doing. And gee, they've had a society that's lasted 10,000 years. Maybe we should check them out. So that's where they found that they... And they found DNA evidence, actually, where they mated with the Croatan Indians, Indian tribes. So they said, hey, there's a different way than your extractive system. There might be a different way to live here. So, and then the Many-Headed Hydra starts off with there's a ship of they're actually indentured servants that they're going to dump at Jamestown. And the ship crashes off of Bermuda, and they all go to Bermuda. And they say, hey, we're not going to go on to Jamestown. We got Bermuda here. We got coconuts. We got stuff. We got a nice lifestyle here. And this is a great little self-sufficient lifestyle we got going here. We're not going to go anywhere. So what the argument is that we don't want to be dependent on your corporate system of extraction. And so that's why there's been, and it even ties people, the original colonists that fought against in the Revolutionary War against England, were saying, we're not going to sit here and just for you to extract stuff from us. So, and most of them, it was more of a slave revolt when you read Gone to Croatan and The Many-Headed Hydra. It's more, to them, it's more of a slave revolt than a middle-class uprising in the Revolutionary War. So, yeah, we don't want to be dependent. And the example I give is the movie, and this is fiction, the Total Recall. You know, they have the dome on Mars. They cut off, when there's an insurrection in the dome on Mars, they just cut off the air to everybody. So this is why we don't want to be dependent on multinational corporations for our basic essentials of life. We can go and create those ourselves. And so we need open space. We need to keep open space. And this should be the criteria for development, is that if it impinges on native societies. And so forth, you know, and stops people from being able to become self-sufficient and small and dependent on your neighbor. We want to be dependent on your neighbor and nature rather than dependent on a multinational corporation. All right, so that ties in, believe it or not, to South Central Farm, because what this was they wanted to make this a warehouse district. And not only did they want to stop people from being self-sufficient, they wanted to make them more dependent on warehouses and corporations. So this is the issue. This was the underlying issue of the South Central Farm. And I won't mention his name, but what this guy did was they came up with the money to buy this thing, and someone insulted him in the news, and he just decided, he was a land speculator, and he said, no, I'm just not going to sell it to you. So it laid fallow. I think they just finally now developed it, but they had laid literally with nothing on it. They scraped everybody off from the South Central Farm and left it fallow with nothing on it for almost 20 years. Okay, so this is what you're going to hear is Marissa. I was working with killradio.org down there, and Marissa was a blind woman who was touring the country and doing interviews. It was one of the first, I think she had a podcast, if I remember right, and this was back in 2001, 2002, when podcasts weren't so popular. She was going around the country and interviewing groups that were against, that were into social, in favor of social justice. All right, so that's what you're going to hear. After Victor Bailey and Joe Zawinul, Marissa interviewing people on South Central Farm back in the day, coming up here on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Paceworks, Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening.
Ima so se stani sinema abat sis ulen ax to the mo arlo sinem u ad es. I das numits da da ales kusene, ales dinam, utus ilematus sene, ales dinam, ulunau! Thank you.
Thank you. And they're situated over in LA. There are community gardens, and there's a very long history here. Justice Thomas, could you just explain to us a bit of history about the South Central Farmers? I understand that there will be the farmers will be evicted very soon. Is that correct?
That's correct. The history of this land is related to the 1992 uprisings. And what happened was that the Mayor Bradley in 1992 mitigated this land to basically to mitigate for all the inequities that existed in the community. And what has happened along now is that, you know, we've been trying to save this location for over 2.5 years. And we've attempted a legal process, and basically, as we've known historically, the legal process does not favor those who don't own anything. And so we basically are now left to only a political avenue, which is to try to pressure the city officials into coming up with a solution where basically they can offer the real estate developer another piece of land where he can put his warehouse, and the community can maintain this 14 acres community farm because it is the largest in the nation of this kind in a highly densely populated community.
So we're really talking about a community here that is made up of people of color over in Los Angeles who are the working poor and are growing a lot of fruits and vegetables and herbs, and the children are in a safe environment. And we're talking about a capitalist developer here over in LA who's wanting to build a warehouse and demolish the farm, yeah?
That's correct. There's actually even something more sadistic to this situation. It has to do with the way that this deal went down, and I think that's really what we've been challenging all along. And people trying to frame this issue about and whether it's his property rights that we're trying to devoid him of, and you know the history of property rights in America is a long history, a 500-year history of patenting, acquisition, and expropriation of land. So we won't go into that situation, but what we can say is that this struggle isn't about questioning someone's property rights, but rather questioning how he got those rights. And these rights are basically have been tainted by the situation that the city attorney who was at the time arguing this case against Horowitz when he originally sued, basically, on the one hand, in the Community Investing Magazine, he had this article that he's publishing where they had 22 sites across Los Angeles where they were basically saying, oh, we're going to give these pieces of land to real estate developers, yet at the same time, he was litigating this lawsuit against Horowitz. And then, you know, the judge at that time, which was Judge Crispo, was basically telling Horowitz, hey, you don't have a case against the city. And then all of a sudden, in a closed room meeting, they decide to sell the land back to Horowitz, which was the advice that the city attorney gave. Now, if you look at the city ethics records and you look at the members of the Horowitz group, which are basically the family members, Timothy Eisen, Eileen Horowitz, Ralph Horowitz, Jack Libwa, and Eva Libwa, all of these people made great contributions to Mr. Delgadillo's election to city attorney. So, you know, we this is what we're basically questioning. How did this deal happen? Why was there no due process, even though there is a stipulation in the city charter and administrative code to deal with such a situation? Why didn't they follow that?
Indeed, why didn't they follow that when the city gave the farm to the people in the first place as a result of the riots, wasn't it?
That's correct.
And so they gave that farm there in good faith, and and now they're in a long, ugly legal process.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're basically squatting the land.
Well, we're basically now in a situation where the developer is going to be able to acquire an illegal detainer against the community, and then they're going to forcibly use the sheriff's department, which has a long history of abuse against people of color and working people, and they're going to use them as agents of repression against the common folk. And basically, you know, tell them, hey, you know, you don't have any money, you don't own anything, we got nothing for you.
So it's really practicing genocide, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Genocide of the people.
Right. One of the things that I've always analyzed is the analysis that, you know, the worst situation is to become your own worst enemy. And then, you know, historically, the American people or the American institution has become its own worst enemy. You know, it's turned into the things that the ideals that we always fought for.
That's right. So activists have actually converged on the site to help organize peace protests. And I understand that on Sunday there was some civil disobedience training on the site.
That's correct. We had Cynthia Anderson from the National Lawyers Guild come out with several other lawyers to inform our members of their constitutional rights and their legal obligations under the Constitution, and to basically be prepared because while the courts may have ruled against us, we still feel that there's an immorality into how all of this has happened and how the courts have been used to justify the transfer of land. One particular situation that I'd like to point, Maritza, is that the court refused to publish the decision, basically saying, well, we're kind of ashamed of this decision that we made, but because it's a technicality, we have to follow it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They used a piece of law that didn't apply to this situation to justify justify the decision that they made. So even there, you can see that they're saying, well, we're not willing to publish this decision because, well, it's bad for them. It's not good. That's not what the spirit of the law was meant. So somebody is using it and they're applying this extreme Descartian logic and basically saying, well, because the logic follows, and this must be the answer, versus, well, what is the moral situation of the community? What are the needs of a community? And to do a ways and means versus a strict Euclidean analysis of this whole situation.
Yeah, it's pretty appalling. And there's actually three of us here that are doing the show, and I'm just wanting to ask if either of you others have got questions to ask.
Yes, actually, I do have a question.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm going by the name Dirt, mm-hmm. and it seems to me that it just seems like that they feel that this is a threat of that they might lack of social control.
Well, I think that there is actually a fundamental. We are questioning the fundamentals of dependency, which is in a purely consumeristic society, we are only meant to be elements of consumption versus elements of self-sufficiency. And I think that is the fundamentals that we're questioning. I think that's why we're being repressed, and that's what we're being, you know, this weekend, the fire department station 14 from Newton Street had a fire truck with a SWAT member on top of it with a ladder and a surveillance camera, and they were basically doing surveillance of our community farm. Does that sound really way out of whack? I mean, can anybody tell me that doesn't sound way out of whack?
That's shocking. So the police brutality tactics have already begun.
Absolutely. They run police cars all, you know, they're running them every 10, 20 minutes. They're circling us, the sheriff's department. And I'm saying, I got 350 people who all they want to do is grow their own food.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that, are we like the most threatening thing in the universe?
Yes. Isn't it also true, though, that at the community that there has been a lot of good, and a lot of people within the community has benefited? It's given an opportunity for people to find work to help them to get off drugs and to get off alcohol as well.
Correct. The way that this program works is it's a way of helping yourself with dignity, meaning that, you know, the nobody is here giving any handouts. People come in here and they help themselves. When they feel that they're good enough, they move on, and another family takes the plot. And then, you know, so there is no, we're not interested in owning this piece of land. We're interested in preserving the success of this program in a place where it's extremely needed, which is in South Central Los Angeles.
And not only preserving it, but also going out and educating the white community, the non-Indigenous community, about the different species of herbs that exist, and looking at medicinal herbs, which is actually
correct.
What we did, what you and I were involved in that mm-hmm. some weeks ago. There was a herbal seminar down at Toma Esperanza, Sorry, it was a couple of months ago, actually. And, you know, we were educating the wider community about all the different Mexican herbs that were growing in the garden. Now, if that garden is taken away, crime rate is going to go up. Everything is just going to go haywire. I suppose what I'm interested in finding out now is that I understand that there's a camp out this weekend.
Right, and we're actually calling out as we're calling for a massive mobilization across the state to help save this extremely unique place, which only exists. And this is like the biggest community farm in a highly densely populated area across the United States. Now, what we want to do is we want to mobilize activists to come and stand in support of these families who may not be able to stand, you know, because they have children, because they have ill parents, but that this program needs to be saved is the fundamental issue that we were advocating. And we're asking for, you know, not only for the Saturday camp out, but also for nights of solidarity, which means people come at night and help to be there in case that when the developer comes, we can basically resist with all of our constitutional rights to basically send a message out that this is something that the community needs and they're willing to make a stand for it.
So, hi, this is DJ Lotus, also with Radioactive. Hi. And thanks a lot for doing the interview with us. I really hope that people do come out to help you. What this reminds me of is the MST, or the Movimiento Sem Terra in Brazil, which is a group of that they take over and occupy farms, and then they you know, put them to use for the community. Oftentimes they take over commercial land that's being used for like sugar or commercial crops, and then turn them into farms. And in those cases, people actually go into the farms and they're willing to stay there even when the owners or police want to try to kick them out. I really hope people come out to your event, and I'm wondering what do you feel like their response is going to be? Do you feel like you're ready to stay there even if they try to kick you out?
Well, we've been already staying there for over 2 months. So, you know, our feeling is we're going to do everything that we can do, everything that we can do legally. And that's basically our feeling, you know, because, you know, that's what people have committed to do. Because then the feeling in the community is, hey, you know, you guys have taken everything away from us. We got nothing else left. So what, you know, taking a stand for this isn't going to take any more away from us. You know, we've been able to fight them off for 2.5 years, and everybody said, oh, it can't be done, it can't be done. So, you know, in a sense, we've already won. We've won the symbolic, you know, we may lose the war, but we won a couple of battles. And I think that our feeling is we still have faith that the activist community, once, you know, I think like Maritza, you know, once she discovered this place and, you know, she felt and she smelled it, and she tasted it, I mean, you get sold on this place. Once you go in there, it's like you never come back the same. And that's what we want people to come out so that they can see, hey, this is what you're fighting for, and that this is worth preserving for the community. What I want people to, if people want to get a hold of us, they can get a hold of us through our website, www.southcentralfarmers.com. And on there, there's the phone numbers, emails. They can contact us to get a hold of us to let us know if they're coming, and any other questions they may have about anything related to our struggle.
And so, what about? Can you actually tell people the location of the garden, or would you prefer not to do?
It's at 41st and Alameda. It's a public place. You know, the thing that I told the fire captain is like, hey, I got nothing to hide. We're not doing anything illegal. We want, you know, this is where it's at. Everybody knows where it's at. Why are you pretending, you know?
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You had a question?
Yes. Can you, for our listeners, can you repeat the website?
Sure. It's www.southcentralfarmers.com.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. For coming
well,
on to the
thank you all for
program.
Having me, and let's stand in solidarity.
Absolutely, and you can come back anytime.
Yeah, we're speaking with Tesso from the South Central Farmers, and he'll be speaking about an ongoing battle there, and also talking about his perspectives in regards to the immigration bill, because I think that's severely linked. So So, Tissa, can you just start off by introducing yourself and just talk about some background regarding the South Central Farmers?
Sure. My name is Tissa Somok. I'm an elected representative of the South Central Farmers. The South Central Farmers is composed of 350 families who who've been farming for over 14 years, a 14-acre plot in the middle of, you know, imagine an industrial zone completely grayed out, and then all of a sudden you have 14 acres of green space that's been used by the community to grow food. In 2003, the city, in a backroom deal, sold the land extremely undervalued to a developer without notifying the community, without giving the community due process. So we've been fighting this struggle now for over 3 years to try to preserve this space in the community so that people can keep helping themselves, keep growing food, and keep providing an open green space for the rest of the community, and additionally subsidizing the food supply of the local community.
Yeah, Tissa, it sounds to me as though you've spoken about this issue many, many, many times, yeah? There's so much going on, but I was wondering, you know, with the South Central Farmers and what's happening, could you just give listeners just a summary of the latest that's been happening with the farm?
Well, the latest is that apparently we're doing such a good job that the Los Angeles Times has put us on their radar, and on March 11th they published an article called LA Gothic, indirectly implying that by preserving this space we're going back to, you know, the serfdoms of Europe, which is, you know, not very much in line with the indigenous perspectives that people have on this continent. Additionally, the LA Weekly did an extreme attempt to do character assassination on myself and the other elected official of the farmers. They you know, did a complete try to find any kind of dirt they had on us, and they published a document called, you know, where they interviewed 20 people who were no longer at the farm, and then they didn't interview anybody who is currently on the farm as to how they feel about their leadership. So there was a complete hit attack on us to try to break support for a struggle that is basically surviving in L.A. And this is, you know, I was also additionally interviewed by a reporter from the L.A. Times who says, you know, I don't understand how you guys have been successful. He goes, these tactics never work in L.A. These are the kinds of tactics that work in other countries. And I go, you know, we continue to struggle, and we have no other choice. These are the cards that have been dealt to us, and we continue to play them. And we think we've been successful because we stuck to our principles and the principles of justice for everybody in a society. And so, you know, the media has done a barrage of attempts to try to break this movement down, and they haven't been successful. You know, we continue to garnish community support, to garnish national support, and additionally garnish international support. So, you know, their attempts, I think, are a little bit too late in the game. And it's interesting that, you know, 350 families in the middle of South Central, where nobody cares, that we would be so important that there were publishers on the LA Times, the LA Weekly, and all of these magazines that are trying to destroy, you know, basically they themselves exposing their, you know, principles, meaning that they are extremely all for property rights, and that they are for eminent domain as long as it benefits developers. They're not interested in anything that affects people of low income or people in poverty.
It's absolutely horrendous. I mean, one of the things that I was reading the other day is about the LA Times really putting on display they say that the farmers, that there's infighting, and, you know, talking about people being elitist, the organizers being elitist, and it's all bullshit, you know.
Absolutely. One of the attacks on us was that we were activist organizers. Like, well, wait a minute, we are part of the community. My dad started this project. I mean, how, you know, they were trying to portray us as outsiders in this community. And, like, you know, I've been at this garden for 8 years. Rafina has been there for 8 years. We are absolutely not outsiders. And the reason that people have so much faith in us is because they know us. We've been with them from the very beginning. You know, we've been there with them when there was the good times, and then we're there right now when it's a tough struggle. And that, I think, is where they made a calculated mismeasure. They assumed that we were brought in as outside organizers, and that by doing that, you know, people would be dissuaded from supporting us, and it backfired on them, because it's actually created a situation where people are more supportive of us, because they see right through this attack that it was basically a hit job hired by Jan Perry, the councilwoman of the district, and, you know, somebody who has set up an interesting situation. She has brought in all of these black organizations to testify on her behalf indirectly, and then, you know, we have to defend ourselves, and then she says, oh, we're accusing her of racism. Like, well, you know, you're playing this card. You know, we never play the race card, because it's always about poor people, whether they're white, black, purple. It's always about poor people, and then she can only survive if she makes this issue about racism, which is not what we're about. You know, we would attack her if she was purple, you know? Because, you know, what she's doing is incorrect. It's not just. And so she wants to characterize the situation as Latinos against African Americans. It's like, well, this has nothing to do with that. It has to do with you trying to create division in the community by creating this, and then you turn around and complain that we're attacking you and that we're being racist. It's like, excuse me?
It's a divide and conquer strategy, I think.
Absolutely.
And I was present at that meeting in the council chambers, where one of the members of the South Central Farmers actually called her out, and not calling her out as a person, but actually calling her out as a council member, and as about how is she accountable, what is she going to be doing for the South Central Farmers. And I think from that perspective, she to save face now, she's kind of fighting back. But it's not really about her. It's about what is the council doing as a representative of the council and of the city? What is she actually doing?
Right. And I think that that's a very interesting question, because, you know, she has given millions and millions of profits to real estate developers. If you look down Alameda, I mean, her district is the whole of downtown, meaning all of the extremely expensive real estate. And on the opposite end, she has all of this, you know, all the poor people of South Central. And yet she has done so much for people like Eli Broad, who is an extreme developer in L.A., recently gave $25 million to have his name on a building at USC, and yet she could not get him or any of her other developers to do something for her community. And I think that that's where the question is, are you the great equalizer, or are you the great broker? Which one are you, right?
Absolutely, and in case people have just tuned in, you're with Radioactive San Diego. You're actually listening to Tesso. It's an interview about the South Central Farmers. And in fact, I did some live coverage from a protest down at City Hall, and that was actually on the 27th of March, just so that listeners know. Monday, the 27th of March. If you want to download it, it's on radioindymedia.org. So that's just to give you some feedback there. So, Tesso, tell us about the eviction. I understand that there was an eviction notice posted a couple of weeks ago on the gates of the farm. Is that correct?
That's correct. And this is actually, let me kind of put this into context, because what the situation is that the politicians and the developers are using the farmers as pawns. I mean, and I hate to be in the middle of this, but we have no other... We can't do anything about it except play the cards that we've been dealt. You know, the Trust for Public Land has been trying to negotiate a contract to basically try to save the space. And then what the developer has done to get more for his money is he has served the eviction, which he didn't have to do. And what this has done is to create create a sense of desperation in the community. So he is going to profit on our pain and suffering, you know. because the community, the grandmothers are feeling distress, and they're, you know, people are feeling basically you know, a lot of fear and you know, terror. It's a form of terrorism, and so this eviction is a form of terrorism because he is basically trying to get more money by creating the intensity, and then he knows that, you know, we will go to city council and we will attack them, and then so indirectly, you know, he's creating, he's using a terrorist act to profit.
Absolutely, it's a terrorist act. I mean, you know, if listeners could just meet the Mexican women, you know, I've actually had lunch at their tables and seen them firsthand, you know, making the tacos. You know, the farmers markets, mm-hmm. markets are absolutely amazing. And being able to talk with the farmers about all the different medicinal herbs, and then for this terrorist act, look at these old people, you know, what they've gone through, Tesso, you know.
Right.
So with this eviction now, where does the farm stand?
What happened was we got a judge assigned, we challenged that judge, and then we got another judge assigned to us, and he was too liberal, and Horowitz is challenging that judge. Hmm. And currently we haven't been assigned another judge or a court date. So we're waiting for the court date to happen to go back and to fight the eviction. We have submitted over 150 claims of right of possession, meaning that, you know, as tenants, we have tenant rights, and we can't be deprived of our due process. That's, you know, partly the basis of the Constitution, right? And not only
That's
the
it.
United States Constitution, but the California Constitution, that we need to be given due process, okay?
That's right. And
so that's where we are. We're in a sense in purgatory. You know, we're not doomed yet, but we are halfway in between, and we're waiting to see what, how they're going to play this out. And again, this is all an act of a low intensity warfare. You know, they're trying to psychologically wear our people down, you know, to get them to give up. But I think it has backfired, and I'll tell you how to, you know, I'm linking this now back into the you know, the 1.5 million people on the streets of LA. We were in that protest, and we feel very proud because we've been showing people for the last 3 years that, you know, you have got to get out in the street, and you have to get out and vote with your feet, and you have to get out and pound the cement and tell them how you're not happy. Because they don't know any other language other than the mass mobilizations and, you know, mass people basically stating how they're not happy. Mm. And this is beyond, you know, beyond whatever your legal status is or what legal situation is that people have got to get out and you got to struggle. And we've been doing it for 3 years. And we were part of that organizing committee that put together that march. So we're very proud because we feel that we've been in the vanguard showing our community that if grandmothers, like we have, and as you've seen, if we have grandmothers and we have little kids out there protesting for what they feel is just, everybody needs to go out and do that. And then, you know, you've seen that this has not been taken lightly, you know, that the politicians are being forced to reckon the statistical numbers. One of the fundamental issues about conflict in nature is that conflict can be overcome by the process, and this is a straight Darwinian ideology, is that conflict is overcome by dominance, and we tend to in the American thinking that is always by force, and that is not necessarily. Dominance can always be by numbers, can be by ideology, can be by morality, and this is where we stand. We stand with numbers, we stand with morality, and we stand with ethics. So we have a lot of things going for us.
Absolutely, Tesso. And can you talk about also any upcoming events or that people can participate in or help out with the farm?
Sure. We have, you know, we continue to go to city council. You know, this is the thing I think that's bothering them the most, that you have a group of people that for 3 years have been going to city council twice a week to remind them and not to let them forget that this struggle is not going away. They have tested our resolve, and our people have stood the test. And we, one of the things is that people can help us by going to city council and testifying in support of this issue. Additionally, we have a panel discussion on the 9th at the community farm with professors like Devin Payne from the University of Washington. We have Immortal Technique, who is a rapper in South Central, who has chosen to stand with the South Central farmers, and they want to have a discussion about how important land use policies are in communities like South Central. So we're going to be having that on the 9th. It's going to be a Sunday. It runs from about 2 o'clock to about 7. And we have a couple of concerts coming up that people can go to our website, www.southcentralfarmers.com, that we can let you know. Right now I don't have all the exact details.
That's okay.
But if you check on our website, we have a couple of concerts coming up, again, you know, to continue bringing awareness and to continue reminding the politicians that we're not going to go away that easy, that they have got to do something for their communities besides brokering the real estate, besides, paying lip service to poor people. They have got to do something.
Yeah, it's very interesting, all of this. And, of course, there's the campouts as well. People are still camping.
Right. People can continue to help by coming to spend the nights with a solidarity with us. And again, you know, any kind of support that they can give us is always welcome, as long as it's constructive and it's in line with the mission about what the farmers want to accomplish, which is to preserve the space in South Central.
And the police helicopters, are they flying over the...
Absolutely. We still continue to get helicopters. We still continue to have the sheriff's presence basically coming and, you know, checking to make sure we're still there, the helicopters with the spotlights. And so, you know, we continue to endure and resolve. When our resolve is, it's unwavering because we know this is the moral correct issue and that, you know, that people demand justice and justice must be had.
Yeah, we always have to be aware of infiltration and surveillance.
Absolutely.
In our movements.
Yeah.
And be very mindful of that. Thank you so much, Tesso, for coming
Thank
onto
you.
The show. And keep in touch and look after yourself.
Bye, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
We were speaking with Tesso from the South Central Farmers, and we'll be going to a CD shortly and ending the show. Pepperbox, unless you've got any other comments.
No, I just want to say what a great show. I've really enjoyed and learned a lot from all of these interviews. So I hope the listeners are happy.
This is DJ Sinistee from the show Talk is Cheap, Saturdays at 4 p.m. on KEPW 97.3